Julian here, or you might know me from Haunting Hill House. I love horror. I definitely have so much fun doing horror movies and TV shows, just anything horror. So, I recently just got to go to the arcade with my friend from Haunting, Olive/Abigail, and she's definitely still real. Do you not believe me? Because nobody believes me. I hope your podcast goes really great, and bye.
They've conquered the big screen. Now, get ready for the spin-off sure to send chills down your spine. It's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Destin in Don't Go Out There, the series.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There podcast. Just want to thank all our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network. So there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome back, everybody, to DGOT, the series. We really appreciate you guys tuning in. Tonight, we're going to be concluding The Haunting of Hill House. I'm really excited to conclude this series. It's one of my favorite of all time, if not my favorite. I'm excited to review these final two episodes. They're very emotional, very powerful. I love this series, and I'm really looking forward to breaking it down with my fellow brethren. Dustin, what do you think of the final two episodes?
I don't know. I know you said you're excited to wrap this up. I am too, but for other reasons. Like, I thought the show in totality ended up being okay. It's not my favorite. It's definitely not the worst thing I've watched. Jesus Christ, I've watched some shit. But I thought the last two episodes were just fine. Definitely not on par with episodes, 5 and 6 that I was so high on, but better than some of the other episodes. So, yeah, it was just fine.
Yeah, a few years ago when I watched this, I do recall the ending being a little bit of a letdown for me. That didn't really change on this watch through. Like, I still like the show a lot. I mean, it wasn't one of those True Blood series or Game of Thrones series enders where it ruined the whole show for me. It wasn't bad at all, and it's probably on me. The rest of the show is just so good. I built it up in my head, and admittedly, it was a bit of a letdown. Like, there was stuff I wish was different. But overall, letdown or not, I thought it was a very good series.
I'm kind of in the same boat. Not that I was let down as much as you two, I don't think. I still like the episodes, but there's definitely almost like a noticeable drop-off, and I don't know why that is. Maybe because I do think the show does such a good job building and building and building and building. I feel like that's where your money is to the end. Like, what it was building to, I was a little let down by, in the sense that, like, I feel like they had a lot of really good ideas cooked and maybe, or, you know, I should say cooking, and we didn't get to see them cooked all the way, I guess, for lack of a better term. Still enjoy it. Still a really great show. Fucking love the show all the way through. Something felt a little flat, especially episode 9 for me, where I kind of felt like this episode's a little long for no reason, and I felt like this could have all been one episode, in my opinion. There's just a smidge of fluff I felt like we could have cut out here. But again, all in all, still really good. One thing that does stand out in these two episodes, the acting from everybody across the board is fucking awesome. Every single person does their part justice, and I want to give big kudos to every single person in the cast. I mean, the last two episodes, they all act their fucking asses off. So whether I love everything that was written for them is really not important in that conversation because they fucking crushed it.
I did like episode 10 a lot better than episode 9, but I was just speaking in, you know, combined the two together. But episode 9 was, it was okay.
Any more opening thoughts before you jump into it? All right, episode 9, Screaming Mimis. The episode starts with Olivia asleep on the couch before the storm with Luke and Nell. She refuses help from Hugh, wanting to soak in the moment until she realizes Luke is gone and in Hugh's arms heading upstairs, to her shock. Miss Dudley and Olivia are cleaning up the broken glass from the storm. Miss Dudley says she slept through the storm, she supposes. Olivia says she slept through most of it and is having the strangest dreams. She reveals to Miss Dudley her father died when she was 12 unexpectedly. She tells her of feeling all her emotions suddenly, sitting in his recliner. What she thought was a hailstorm was actually little black rocks, and one broke her sister Janet's window. It stopped suddenly, and she begins to name other times in history that this happened. Things make sense as a kid. When you grow up is when they start to sound crazy. Olivia goes to her study to enjoy some tea and read a book until suddenly a migraine attacks her. She walks past the clock repairman and into the kitchen where Luke is begging for clothes from Shirley for Abigail, a girl in the woods. Olivia ignores him basically and leaves. Shirley says to leave her alone. She isn't feeling good lately. Olivia goes into her study but sees Shirley's morgue where Nellie's dead body lies. She cries and backs away until she sees Luke's body on the ground post-drug overdose. Nellie sits up and cries out and cuts her mouth open, crying out, Mommy. Olivia falls backward onto the floor in her study. She's in bed with Hugh, telling her dreams. She admits her headaches are almost constant, and dreams are so vivid. Hugh thinks they're both a little loopy recently and in disbelief of his hand injury. He fears he's put too much on Stevie. She kisses him, saying he's tough, and they go to sleep. All right, that's the opening set of scenes.
So
Brian,
it's interesting that this entire episode is a flashback. I mean, there are no scenes that take place in present day. And again, something I never paid attention to when I first watched this was that, okay, now each sibling obviously gets an episode. Hugh got an episode. And now basically Olivia gets her episode. And we get some closure on what happened, you know, that final night in the house. OCD me likes that organization there. I really like that. But yeah, a couple of big lines here right away in the cold open. first cold open in a few episodes, by the way, with Olivia saying, I wish I could freeze them and keep them this way forever. That's super deep considering, you know, how the house plays off them and off of her anxiety, and that all mothers can relate to, you know, losing their children to the real world eventually. You know, then also later on, you know, talking to Miss Dudley saying, you know, guess that's all about how we feel when we were young. Very smart by Flanagan, in my opinion, asking the question, do these childhood traumas ever really go away? You know, and then giving us the backstory with her trauma and losing her dad, further just strengthening, I think, that not wanting to lose her children and using that storm as a metaphor for anxiety and panic attacks. The line, I'd had the darkest feelings of my life that day, and I just shot them up in the sky and they fell right back down on me. I thought that was a beautiful written line. And hey, I noticed the clock ghost with the mustache. Insert Leo DiCaprio pointing at the TV meme here. Finally. But again, you know, the house is such a fucking dick, right? I mean, geez, like giving Liv that vision of Nell and then that same vision of Luke OD that we've, you know, seen before and we'll see again later. Playing right off of what we just heard with her anxiety of losing her kid. That vision of Nell cutting the wires off. Like, holy shit. And episode 1, I remember like me or someone talking about Carla Gugino's acting, but she kills it in this episode. And I think especially that reaction in that scene I thought was amazing. And did we ever mention Gugino being in Son-in-Law with Pauly Shore? Anyone remember that movie? Fucking classic. Whatever happened to Pauly Shore? Anyway, sorry, tangent. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Good. I knew I'd seen her somewhere.
You know, it's funny, Nico started off this explanation of these episodes by saying how emotional they are. And the first line in my notes is, Victoria Crane, call me sometime. So that lets you know where my mind's at,
you're
buddy.
You're scum. You're sleazeball.
I'm just speaking from the heart. Speaking from the heart, that's all. bro, Miss Dudley is kind of like me for real. Because storms also relax me and put me to sleep. Doesn't matter how bad they are. Thunder, lightning, shit. bang around outside. I could sleep through any of that shit. It just puts me in the mood to fall the fuck asleep. This whole monologue is really good. Here by Victoria Pedretti. You know, certainly losing her mind, but I think that that's a line that's walked really perfectly here. It also look, Steve, I've complained. I've gone back and forth in this on this show about how much I like or don't like Steve. Okay. But this also, some of this also shows to me that Steve wasn't totally wrong. I mean, the family sees ghosts. I know we kind of find out that he sees ghosts, like, but he doesn't understand that he's seen ghosts. Like, so there's like a really weird line that I walk with Steve. But I want to give him the benefit of the doubt because of how his story ends. I won't say Steve got to finish his story, but, you know, maybe someday he will. I will say they have an argument over, you know, which clothes are cool or in or whatever as little kids. And that always really upset me as a child because my parents always did the best they could. And it never really mattered to me what the fuck I wore. As long as it fit, I was cool. I never got made fun of for my clothes, though, either. So maybe that kind of lets me know where I know someone's about to call me rich, but that's not true. That's not true. Again, we did these notes a couple weeks ago, so I'm really trying to get back into the headspace here of why I wrote what I wrote in real time. So last thing I'll say here is I don't need Hugh to turn into this stereotypical husband that doesn't believe his wife, talking about in the past, because he kind of comes off that way here. So again, good set of scenes. They're all in the past, but that's all I had.
Yeah, so first of all, Olivia must have been zooted off her ass. She completely zoned out and didn't even notice Hugh picking Luke up off her. I'll have what she's on. When she's telling Mrs. Dudley her rock rain story, when she's telling the story, though, Mrs. Dudley's face was interesting to me. Like, she didn't look like she was intently listening. She looked like she was scared to death. And then Olivia's face didn't match. She was telling the story with a look of amusement, like it was a fond memory. I don't know. It just seemed odd to me. Seemed off. You kids have fun made me laugh. Liv said, I don't have time for your bullshit. Leave me alone. That was funny. Olivia seeing Nell and Luke as dead adults was weird. Like, I'm not sure what the point of it was because Olivia died well before the kids grew up. So I don't know why she had to have that vision. Just seemed kind of forced to me. Honestly, it's a kind of a shaky start to this episode for me.
Her seeing the older versions of her dead kids really creeped me the fuck out. Even around this watch. Like, the first time it definitely did, but I was like, oh, man, that would be fucking haunting as shit if you ever saw that.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Night shots through the house until Olivia hears a floorboard creak and wakes up. She sees a little girl at the door who sneaks away. She fails to wake Hugh up and follows. She sees Miss Hill in the room with Hugh now. She tells Olivia to come on and they go into her study. She tells Olivia they're all a dream. She's quite the looker. Willie will love her. Miss Hill begins talking to Olivia about children and keeping them safe. They both share dreams of losing their kids. It was just a dream, a screaming Mimi, the worst. She says she woke up and they were in their bed and points and were in the twins' room. She asks Olivia, what if they were stuck in the worst dream? Olivia says she'd wake them up until she begins whispering in her ear. Olivia wakes up with a screwdriver to Hugh's neck. She's crying, saying she was having a horrible dream. She's crying, admitting she needs to visit Janet. She's underestimated these migraines. She's walking through the house, and there's all kind of construction work going on, and her head is pounding. She's tucking Nellie and Luke in bed, and young Nellie and Luke give great performances. They ask about getting caught in horrible dreams, and it being her killing them, sending them out into the dark. But are we safe with you, Mommy? Are we really? Olivia snaps out of it when Steve walks into the empty room. Olivia is sitting down, getting some privacy, and she asks Ms. Dudley about the paint. She tells him it's for a project for your son. Olivia cries, feeling terror about her kids outside these walls. Ms. Dudley says if you're worried about your children, you don't let anyone tell you your feelings are wrong. The world has teeth, and it eats. It doesn't care if they're innocent. Ms. Dudley asks when they're leaving, and she encourages them to leave earlier, if possible. Especially you, Olivia. This is a strange house. We don't stay after dark. My child is not allowed to step foot in this house. She revealed she didn't plan to help here until learning it was a family with little children. She said she'd work in the daylight to help keep an eye. The house is different in the dark. She leaves to take the paint to Steve. I'll pray for you, Olivia. A few extra for you tonight.
Poppy, the great Katie Parker, who we see again in Bly Manor and Fall of the House of Usher and Midnight Club. But She was Annie in Oculus, if you remember, episode 46, don'tgoother.com. Mike loves that movie. But it's interesting, Hugh saw her as an old woman, and now Olivia sees her as this young, vibrant girl, like Mrs. Dudley described her, actually. And we're back to the house being super dick again, because playing off that fear of losing her kids again. Like, whatever. But I did think it went on a little too long to me. Poppy felt more like a trope to get across a point that I don't really think we needed. You know, as a viewer, we already knew what was happening with Olivia and why. So I didn't really think we needed Poppy explaining that. So just my two cents there. Again, just a lot of Back to the Future toing it here with Liv, you know, seeing all these scenes from another point of view. You know, in the case of, you know, screwdriver to Hugh's throat, that was, I think, the third time that I think we've gotten to that point in the story and they've all converged. But now that we're in episode 9, these points are almost becoming, not almost, I mean, they are now like landmarks in our head to keep this jumping around kind of in order. I thought it was a very smartly written. Good choice there. And I hinted about this before with the Dudleys, but I'm going to go ahead and spoil it a little bit here just because I want to talk about this shot. But I wrote the term shoehorned in my notes, actually. But I felt like there the whole Dudley story was a little shoehorned in here. But there's a ton of people online that say Mrs. Dudley is a ghost, or I guess in this case, an angel, because there's a shot here in this set of scenes where she's talking to Olivia and is standing in front of the angel statue, and those wings like line up perfectly on her. I mean, I personally think she's alive, but again, I'll get more into them later whenever we get there. But I wanted to talk about that angel shot there. But I also don't think she's an angel because I think she tells Liv the worst possible thing at this moment of worry, where she's like, maybe I should listen to Hugh. And Ms. Dudley's like, no, motherfucker, you should worry. So, you know, there is that. I don't think she would really be an angel in that case. But another decent set of scenes, but it just drug to me with Poppy. And then again, I think Mrs. Dudley's speech drug on as well here at the end. So my least favorite set of scenes here, especially pacing wise.
We don't have the same thing verbatim, but I promise, brother, we are saying the same thing here. For a penultimate episode to a series, things move pretty slow in this first 15, 20 minutes. Now, I'm not necessarily complaining, but after the last two episodes, which I felt had a ton going on, bang, 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 hit you over the head with a lot, pacing feels really off to me. I will say Olivia interacting with all of her dreams. I know, you know, it's fleshing out what goes on in her head. But like you mentioned, we already know this stuff, right? Like, this is stuff we've already, like, none of this is new information except for the Poppy stuff. It all feels like we've seen this before. And I know you mentioned Back to the Future, like, yeah, like we're seeing the same thing over and over again from different angles and sides. But it just, if you know, this is like the fourth time we've seen Olivia hovering over her husband with a screwdriver. Like, we've seen this, like, we know this happened. And I just kind of feel like some of the fluff here could have been cut out. But again, that, maybe that's a nitpick. I don't know. But it threw the pacing of the episode off, in my opinion. I like the slow reveals of the ghosts, though. I know they're there the whole time. But even upon second watch, I didn't catch every single fucking ghost throughout all 10 episodes. So I do like that they start to appear more and more in plain sight. This scene where Nell and Luke as kids are talking to Olivia and basically telling her how they turned out was fucking heartbreaking, man. That was some rough shit to watch. You mentioned, you know, Mrs. Dudley here. Just not a fan of her in this episode. Kind of like making Hugh out to be a big old pile of shit, which I don't agree with. In my opinion, that's the way I took it. And just the last thing, we're just getting, and there's a really long monologue with an exposition dump by Olivia of, to me, things we already know. And maybe that's what the benefit of hindsight, having watched this now a second time through, but I don't know. Like, I just felt like this set of scenes had a lot of redundancy. I felt like we could have maybe shortened the episode some.
Amen, brother. Someone's in the house. Lady, you've got a half a dozen kids. Could have been anyone that making racket. That's crazy to me that she just immediately jumped to someone's in the house. The dream lady was a weird choice to me. In a show that's riddled with ghosts, why would she have to have a dream like this? Why not make it a ghost talking to her? A little bit of a gripe there. But it was a nice way to tie in the screwdriver to the next scene we saw a couple episodes ago. Again, she could do that to me. I'd be here for it. Then, Jesus, kids, what the hell kind of TV programs have they been watching? That's some deep and poetic dreams they're describing. Like, that was nuts to me. Then Mrs. Dudley goes on a deep rant talking about the world has teeth and whatnot. The dialogue in this episode is wild to me. Like, they kicked it up. It was much more poetic and lyrical in this episode than we had previously seen. And that continues into the finale. So, but yeah, slow set of scenes, to be honest.
All right, Olivia admires Steve's mirror desk as he asks how long she'll be gone. She panics seeing Nellie and Luke's corpses in the mirror, punching out the mirror. He was asking Olivia about the incident, obviously clueless to how to handle the situation. She breaks, saying she can't find herself anymore. She says she's not stressed, none of the familiar things. She reveals all she is scared now. Do you think there's something wrong with me? He says Monday is too late for your trip, and she says she'll leave first thing in the morning. She worries over all the burden he will have. Olivia saying bye to her children, and Hugh gives her a kiss goodbye. Luke asks if Abigail can spend the night, and she approves. He was dumbfounded looking at the wall, and we're at dinner now where the kids are going nuts as he tries to talk to Olivia. I'm sure Brian can relate to that. He hangs up, and we see Olivia is in a hotel room, not Janet's. A cab arrives at Hill House, and we see Hugh asleep on the couch where Olivia stands watching him. She goes into the basement and grabs the rat poison. Shirley goes into the kitchen and sees Mom's luggage and sees her making tea. She says she missed them too much and came back. Are you dreaming too? She kisses Shirley and walks away with the tea. Olivia wakes the twins and Abigail up. Olivia invites them all to a tea party, but they have to be quiet. They leave the room and see the red room is open. She says, "We are the key," and cracks the door. All right, Brian, so next set of scenes.
Yeah,
so
it's very cool at the start of this to see things continuing to come full circle. And we see that Olivia was seeing Luke and Nell from the future this entire time. That's very satisfying from a viewer perspective, as far as I'm concerned. I love the writing there. Another tremendous performance from Gugino here with Hugh talking about how she's struggling and that she needs help. But I also think that this speaks to not really just mental illness, but how people deal with loved ones struggling with mental illness. Because, you know, Hugh is gaslighting her like fucking crazy. Oh, you're just tired. You need some time away, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. I know this show isn't about mental illness, but I think Flanagan uses this ghost story to also tell a mental illness story and make a statement on that as well, because kind of the same thing he does with Midnight Mass, but with religion. Speaking of Flanagan, a little cameo by him. When Olivia is leaving the house, he's seen like loading her suitcase in and presumably the cab driver there. But we see she ends up at the hotel where Nell ends up and, you know, where all of them end up eventually. And then calling at the worst time imaginable. You mentioned it. I can definitely speak to that happening for sure. It's just ironic. Is it irony? I don't know. It's just crazy, I guess, that it's her fear of the kids being without her and having to survive in the real world with just Hugh ends up being what happens because of what she caused, because of that fear. Very deep shit there. Also, nice detail with her putting on that same nightgown that we see Nell ending up killing herself wearing. But yeah, your heart sinks right here at the end of the set of scenes. Mine did at least. But, you know, I'll get into that in the ending here. Go ahead.
Yeah, you said it, man. I mean, it was a pretty, you know, like, okay, reveal about what Victoria Crane has been seeing this whole time. I thought that was interesting. But I will say, this set of scenes that definitely had more weight, more emotion, but there's still some repetitiveness here. I'm like, okay, man. But I will say, she left, wasn't gone very long, okay? My man Hugh really phoned in dinner here, man. That's giving single dads a bad name, even though he wasn't single. I mean, come on, man. You can make a better din than that, but I'm sure he tried his best. And I have a question. Am I supposed to take, and this is a serious question, am I supposed to take the mold in the house as something figurative or literal? Because it wasn't introduced until like what, episode 6, where they started doing mold repairs on the house. But the whole, I know it's a decaying house that has life to it, which Victoria and Nell and everyone else has mentioned a bunch. But I feel like in this episode, that, like in the future anyway, the whole house is just fucking mold. Well, is that supposed to mean something?
I was just going to say, I took it as it's like a virus that's, you know, kind of spreading. And okay, sure. Yes, that is like a visual representation of it encompassing everything. That was the way I took it.
Okay. I'm glad you answered that, because I asked, and it's just, this is going into the next set of scenes briefly, but when they wake up in that red room, the whole thing is mold. Like, the whole inside of the walls is basically just mold. So clearly that room was like the fucking place of, you know, whether that be a happy emotion, sad emotion, mad emotion, whatever. That room clearly had a lot of weight. So I thought this was a very emotional set of scenes. I don't think I got it across super elegantly, but that's all I had.
So I feel like this episode has too much filler, like way too much. Like, we're using scenes we've already seen more than other episodes did. Like when she smashed the mirror, I think they could have shortened it and we'd still get what they wanted to see. Like when they wanted this to happen, we still understand that. Olivia sitting in a dark hotel room was creepy as hell, straight up lies to Hugh and seemed like she was in a trance. So I thought that's a positive. I liked how that was done. Kittens need their mommies and then they don't. Okay, that made me laugh. Cheryl was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with that? Like, how are you supposed to respond to that? What the hell? But yeah, I don't have much on that set of scenes, the least amount of notes I had. It was just too much filler.
All right, guys, here's the ending. Charlie wakes Hugh up on the couch. She asks about mom being at Janet's, but she was in the kitchen acting weird. Olivia begins asking how they like their tea. Olivia says this is about making sure everyone's safe. Hugh finds the rat poison in the kitchen, and we see them with their tea. Luke asks what's wrong, and she says, nothing at all, finally. Abigail drinks some of the tea as Hugh checks on the kids, finding the twins are gone. He runs to the red room, and Abigail begins to cough and foam at the mouth. Hugh sees the red room door open. He knocks the tea out of the twins' hands, pushing Olivia away and into the wall. Olivia wakes up, seeing Abigail dead on the floor, and walks out the room. The kids are crying in the car, and Luke sees Abigail in the window. Hugh sees ghosts all throughout the house and wakes Steve up. Olivia's checking her kids' rooms, and Miss Hill tells her they're in there, talking about Steve and Hugh. He wants to take them away from you. An old lady ghost calls Poppy a liar. Hugh and Steve run out the room and out the house fast as they can. Olivia watches the car drive away as Steve sees her. Poppy keeps telling her all the bad things he's doing to them. She snaps, telling her to shut up, but she's gone. Olivia goes back in the red room and weeps, seeing Abigail dead on the floor. She sees Abigail at the door, who walks away with another ghost lady down the god darn hallway, if you know what I mean with god. Olivia walks to the edge of the winding stairs, saying he's killing them, and Poppy appears. It's just a dream, a screaming Mimi. She tells her to wake up, find them in their bed. Olivia plunges to the floor below, cracking her skull. We see the family entering Hill House for the first time, and the family is beyond excited. The kids run to their room, and Olivia stays downstairs to let Hugh show them their rooms. You guys go on without me. How could we? He asks as the episode ends.
It's very dark. Like, this definitely explains why Luke and Nell are the most fucked up. but this is kind of what I was talking about with the Abigail thing and it feeling kind of shoehorned in. Like, I feel like she was only really put in here to give some sort of consequences and make someone have died, but it not be one of the siblings. But also not be someone that we've seen or even know or even really care about a whole lot. Also, Christ, Hugh, you grabbed 45 fucking kids but couldn't have grabbed her? I mean, maybe taking her to a fucking hospital, maybe save your life? Jesus Christ, man. Regardless, it's heartbreaking to see a little girl die like that. That's just me. I do love how it shows what happened in that first episode, but from a different perspective, though, too. Kind of like with Luke and us kind of getting the real information on preconceived stuff that we've developed ourselves. Because I mean, it shows that it was actually Hugh, or it shows actually Hugh was telling them to keep their eyes closed so as not to see all the ghosts in the house. But when you think at the very start, the very first episode, that it has something to do with don't look at Olivia, you know, something's fucked up with her, like who knows, but it wasn't, it was the ghosts. Then we see it was Olivia on the other side of that door from the start, and it kind of all comes together with her in that in the window where Steve sees her, and we thought it was a ghost to begin with in episode one, but it turns out it was his real mom too. Very cool. I like everything coming full circle here. then we see Olivia's suicide, and we realize that she did actually do it on her own. I mean, yeah, Poppy was there, or the house was there, like metaphorically, I guess, pushing her. But, you know, even though it was the same spot as Nell, it wasn't the same thing as Nell to me, because this was her own choice. But I don't know. I guess it's weird in the fact that it ended with them getting there. Like, this could have almost been, and when I say getting there, I mean like the family, like coming day one into the house. It almost felt like it could have been an ending to the show. Like, it was almost like it felt like that to me a little bit. And I was like, oh shit, okay. Oh, that's right. We have another episode, and we got to find out like how the future plays out. But again, Gugino killed it in this episode, I thought. But as far as like a whole, I feel like that there were, you guys have mentioned it, just a lot of wasted time in the middle.
Yeah, I said this set of scenes has a lot of emotional weight and is more of what I've, you know, been expecting from this episode because of what we got in the prior two. You know, like I mentioned, this Red Room is basically just Mold City. I think Brian kind of explained it the best. It's like almost a virus that's it encompassing the house as it has, you know, life, which has been mentioned throughout the show. Actress that plays Olivia here is just fucking brilliant in these last maybe 12 to 14 minutes. I mean, it's all about her, and she fucking carries it. You mentioned it being her episode. I completely agree. Look, I would lose my mind if I were Hugh, because you just start to see the descent into madness that we love to reference on the show. You know, she doesn't know which way is up, which way is down, you know, what's right, what's wrong, what's real, what's fake. You could just start to see it in her eyes, which is a shame. And I hate to take something away from these emotional moments, but I'd be mad if I were Hugh, because she was looking like a whole ass snack in that dress, bro. I couldn't help but notice it. I'm not trying to ruin the moment, but I'm just saying, call me sometime. That's all I'm saying. All right. But again, first of all, screaming Mimi, it sounds like something an old person calls one of the memes. Actually, I have someone in my life, an older gentleman that thought they were memes for like a decade. So there you go. But look, you mentioned it, and I am glad you did, Brian, because it answered a question. I wrote in my notes, but I think you just answered it. Are we supposed to believe that Poppy pushed her? I think you answered my question, so we're good. Like, I mean, I think you could interpret it like that if you want, but I completely agree. Yeah. Her absolute, I think, self.
Metaphorically, she did. And that's, she fucking went. It looked like she like went to, but it made, I guess, Flanagan made the choice and the distinctive choice to show that she did not touch her as she was jumping.
So. Right, right. You know, last thing, very heartbreaking dialogue here as Olivia comes back into the house and says, "You go on without me." And man, that was tough. That tugged at my heartstrings, man.
Very tense seeing her serve the tea. Like, I was thinking, come on, Hugh, get your ass up there and stop her. Like, that was just, tension was through the roof. And gut-wrenching seeing Abigail get poisoned like that. Great tension seeing all the ghosts show up. And then when Hugh rushed Steve out to the car, that was awesome. This woman is batshit crazy. Carla Gugino, how do you say it? Gugino. She did a great job acting here. She looked desperate, lost, terrified, desolate. Like, just incredible job there. Seeing how Olivia actually died, though, the cops made it look much more questionable than it was. The way it actually happened, Hugh wasn't a suspect. Should have been open and closed after the cops asked the kids their sides of the story to me. And then, you guys go on without me. How could we? That was a very emotional line to end on. So the end of this episode was the best set of scenes by far.
Yeah, before we just move on to episode 10, I just wanted to reflect on episode 9. I agree, Dustin. That's a great way to end the episode. How could we, with Hugh and Olivia? Man, I understand where you guys are coming from with the pacing. Maybe it was a little too much filler, but man, I don't know, man. I just connected with this show on such a emotional level the first time I watched it. Man, I really appreciate relationship building and the character development throughout, because like we've mentioned so many times in the past, once you care about, like, I know Brian mentioned that the most in the mailbag episode, you gotta have characters you care about. And I just love all these characters, young and old. And I love the storytelling and like Bly Manor. I could not get invested into that show at all. And like, and Flanagan, 100%. Like, he has the same actors. So you already have familiarity, but It's just the story didn't invest me, but this one just, it hooked me right in. And I love episode 9. I love episode 10. Especially if you think this episode, the end of the episode is emotional, episode 10's ending is really emotional. So I'm really looking forward to getting into that one.
When young Shirley and Luke are arguing in the kitchen near the beginning of the episode, there's a man, one of those hidden ghosts that's reflected in the glass behind Shirley. And when the camera pans to the other side, you can see him blink and move his eyes. So nice little fun fact there.
All right. Here's the unfun part of the show. I'm going to do the scene by scene on the finale.
Just Lord, be thankful it's not me. Let's go.
No, I'd rather be you. I got a feeling I'm about to stutter through this motherfucker. I'm so tired. All right.
Oh, I will be sending the Floyd Mayweather quote with your picture, pal. I'll figure it out.
We open with a look down from top of the spiral staircase. Great way to drive home how high Olivia's swan dive was. Cheryl comes in and ascends to find young Nell outside the red room. They try a key and speculate that there may be a pony inside, dumbass kids. As they rattle the door handle, we see young Theo inside and find out this was when she was having her dance outbreak a couple of episodes ago. After our opening credits, we see adult Steve typing on his MacBook, and then his pregnant wife comes in with some McDonald's and tries to help him with his writer's block. You heard correctly. She's preggers. Either he got that vasectomy reversed or she's been stepping out and he's just accepting it. As he continues writing, the words are used as narration to when Steve and Hugh showed up at the house that night Luke went to burn it down. As they go through the house, Steve sees a ghost that would make Yao Ming look like Kevin Hart, and then the two of them see Abigail sitting at the bottom of the spiral staircase. The tall ghost gets all in Steve's face, but he locked eyes with his pops and ignored him until he left. Hugh runs up the staircase to the locked red room door, and as he goes to grab some tools, the door opens for Steve. He sees Luke inside, and after he enters the room, the door slams shut, locking Hugh out. This is used as a transition to Steve closing his MacBook, and he tells his wife where he is in the story. We find out that Steve refuses to say Luke has died. He doesn't remember anything that happened after the door closed. Not leaving the house, not getting back to Cali, not knocking his wife up, and then she drops a bombshell. She said, of course you don't remember it because you haven't written it yet. Then she berates him, telling him he's a plastic parasite. Jesus, she went in. She says that she's not real and lifts her shirt to show her baby bump and said the baby won't be real either. Her stomach turns black and then her whole body turns a grayish black, and she starts asking if he'll lose his mind like his mother. Nell appears and touches Steve on the forehead, and he wakes up in the red room. That's the first set of scenes. What'd you guys think?
Not bad. Okay, so we finally get the reveal here in the cold open of what Hugh was, you know, telling older Steve a few episodes ago, where the red room is the playroom. It's Theo's dance room. It's the treehouse. It's the reading room. But man, this dream from Steve, like, bravo, because it is the fake out of the century. I thought we time jumped. My heart sank when she said Luke died. Then gradually you see what is, you know, what this really is. And like I said, just fucking bravo there. I mean, you got me, Flanny. You got me there. And the payoff of Steve walking in and finally seeing all of these ghosts, like, and this shot of the tall bowler hat guy in his face while looking at his dad with that writer Steve voiceover saying the line, "Fear is a relinquishment of logic. We yield to it or we fight it, but we cannot meet it halfway." Like, holy shit. Like, that was very strong writing there. And just shout out to Samantha Sloyan and Lee on the monologue. You know, she gives about Steve being an eater and then he, you know, shits it out. Like, that entire thing is just so damn good. And I'm glad we have, like, Ghost Nell fighting against the house, too. Like, it does have me raise a lot of questions, but I do like it, you know, nevertheless. These siblings, they have been nothing but just beat down over the course of the season, and it's nice to see them helping each other and getting a W here.
Okay, first things first, I would hate to live in a house that had fucking stairs like this, okay? Got to be the biggest fucking pain in the ass ever. That's problem number one. And problem number two, cotton candy or pony are two very diametrically opposed choices, man. That's something. I do like that we kind of find out the red room is whatever everyone wanted it to be for them. Theo dancing in the red room the whole time. So I know Steve's had some successful books, but is Steve like a writer or like a Brian Griffin writer? Like, yeah, I'm writing a book. You're not really writing a book, man. You're just saying you're writing a book. But anyway, So I do like that as a storytelling device in this part, though. And it, again, I know what's coming, but I did like it as like a narrative through line there. That's a tall fucking ghost, by the way, here. Man looks like Dustin hanging out with me and Nico, like, hey, how you doing up there, Dustin? And it's just me and Nico chilling down here. Like, that's how that looked to me.
That's some bullshit, I love, man. This. I can't help it. I can't help you until I hate it.
I didn't say that it was a bad thing. I just said, we're short, you're not. There's nothing we can do about that. And Brian's pretty tall. He's somewhere in the middle, you know? He's a little taller than me. It's up for debate. We'll measure next time, pause. Last thing. I love this monologue here from Lee. It's fucking awesome. And then you get to kind of see her body like rot right in front of him. I fucking love it. I thought it was great. And I thought it was freaky as hell, too.
All right, starting us off, I just thanking my co-host for reviewing the show. I'm not sure how everyone will end up rating it or liking it, but it means a lot y'all did this. I love the opening overhead shot of the winding stairs. I thought it was a great reveal, like you mentioned, Brian, that it was Shirley and Nellie who was knocking on Theo's door when she was dancing. I love the final reveal of what the Red Room is. Holy shit, that's such good storytelling to me. Little Violet McGraw is so cute. Where's the friggin' key? Steve is going through writer's block. My man, check out Stephen Cognetti's interview on don'tgooutthere.com. He gives great advice to overcome that. Check that out, my friend. I love this interaction between Lee and Steve, and wow, what a premonition of him writing their future encounter with Hill House. Not sure if I've said this already, but Michael Heisman, however you say his name, deserves his props for these voiceovers. He could be a good voiceover actor. The inside of Hill House looks spooky as fuck. This scene with Steve not remembering confused the hell out of me on my first watch. But damn, does Lee unload the chopper on him, how she feels about him. Big props, like you mentioned, Brian, to Samantha Sloyan for this line delivery. She kills it. I haven't seen a man get snapped on this bad since The Witch when Anya snapped on her dad. Great effects on Lee's pregnant belly and her face turning black. I thought it looked fantastic. I thought it was a really good opening set of scenes.
First of all, shout out to Mike. I'm very confident that that's the first time diametrically opposed has been used on this show. That was good. That was good.
One of my favorite lines, buddy. I have a very extensive vocabulary. I must add. I just stutter through it sometimes.
You just avoid the words with more than two syllables? Cause I get it.
Hey, go fuck yourself. That's also in my vocabulary, you piece of shit.
Moving on. Steve finds Luke in the Red Room along with a couple of other ghosts, and Luke is foaming at the mouth. We see that when he tried to burn the house down, it refused to burn, and we see Olivia on the stairs and Poppy grab Luke from behind. Cut to when Luke was wondering about Barefoot, and we hear him begging someone on the phone to let him come back before Joey greets him and takes him to a hotel. She says she didn't steal his money and run away. She got the room for them. Yeah, all right. She asks why he followed her and says she thinks he's sweet on her and then tries to peer pressure him into using the H. He stays strong, though, even with her shooting up right in front of him. She says he did, and when he looks at his arm, there's a needle in it. Her eyes turn to liquid, and we cut to Luke in the Red Room. Steve rushes in, door closing behind him, and Poppy touches his forehead, sending him to the floor. Hugh tries to open the door and turns black in the process. Theo and Cheryl come in, and Theo rushes upstairs to Hugh while Cheryl lingers behind. She turns around, and we see that man I asked about a while back toasting his drink. Theo gets the Poppy touch now, and back downstairs, Cheryl is suddenly in a bustling bar. The bartender gives her a martini, and it's from the guy. She points to her ring finger to let him know she's closed for business, but then she sends him wings. That's a real way to a man's heart, ladies. Listen up. The two talk about how weird it is to send someone an appetizer without consent, and she says that she's trying to be funny. I'd say she failed miserably. He pops a squat beside her, and next thing you know, the bar is closing, and he invites her to his room for a nightcap. She looks at his wedding ring and declines the invitation. But she didn't really. The man comes back and sets the record straight. She banged him because he was married. He guilt trips her to hell and back, and then we cut to the funeral home. Kevin talks about how when you die, you learn every secret, and he knows Shirley hopes that she dies first because she's scared of him learning about the affair. In the casket, it's Cheryl. She looks at her own body, and then the corpse sits up and pills at her face before Nell appears and touches her face. When that happens, Cheryl wakes up in the Red Room with her siblings. Steve is trying to revive Luke and says they need help. Sleeping Theo dreams of telling her Asian persuasion about the time she got a whooping for throwing a rock through a window, and then she can't remember why she wears gloves. She doesn't feel anything when she touches Trish's face. Trish babbles on about a man in a wall, and then a million rotten hands come through the bed and grab her face, waking her up in the Red Room. Cheryl and Steve try to revive Luke, but to no avail. He's a goner. The three remaining siblings sit in the silence and shock.
Just want to shout out Dustin with the using H. Loved it. And the Asian persuasion. That had me laughing. Okay. But also shout out to the sound design in this episode. That loud banging heard all throughout the house. The tension is so high throughout this episode. And then Luke's dream ending with showing that he shot up that rat poison. And then Theo and Shirley show up. Like, it's just balls to the wall. And then we finally get that dude that we've been seeing all throughout the series. And it's an affair, just like we've thought. But, I mean, we weren't 100% sure on it, but at this point. But, we did think it was an affair. Then they show us Shirley doing the right thing. The lights go out and comes back and says, "That's not what you said, though." And it's like, oh, shit. Like, even when you think you know the story, it still throws you a curveball. Well, I guess in this case, it would be a slider, probably more accurate. But anyway, I guess kind of like Steve and Luke's, where it's their dream situation at first, and then the house says, like Dennis Nedry in Jurassic Park, you didn't say the magic word. Gotcha, bitch. Anyway, but yeah, I love this scene. I love how tense it got as the house just went in dry on old Shirley. Woo, it's good. But after those three Red Room scenarios, like, I thought Theo's was a little bit of a letdown. Like, maybe she's fucked up enough that she doesn't really have these illusions of grandeur like the other ones do and didn't have to be knocked down a peg or two. But I was disappointed a little bit with her dream sequence. Like her whole dream sequence seemed like it was just to get to the real story of Mr. Hill on the wall. Like, it was just, I don't know, it was just mad to me. But tremendous performance without really even saying anything again from Siegel at the end of the set of scenes with the tear running down her cheek as they realize Luke is dead. Fantastic acting.
I love these scenes with Luke and Steve because they are things that seem real. And then they slowly start to reveal themselves as the workings of Hill House. And I just love how those two things keep kind of weaving together. Like, I think it's really, really well done. Phenomenal storytelling, in my opinion. I didn't need to see Poppy again here. I thought we left Poppy in episode 9. I was kind of hoping we were just going to leave that there. No, got a little Poppy appearance here. It's fine. I am glad to finally be back to primarily the adult part of the story. I know there's, a little bit of kid stuff, but like, I feel now I want to know how this ends. Like, I'm ready now that I know we're watching the final episode. I'm glad that we had that focus here. Listen, Shirley turning into the biggest Petty Betty of all time because of her fucking sister and husband, only to turn out to be a trifling ass, you know what? Come on, man. That is some serious shit right there. And I spoiled it for Dustin a few episodes ago. He just didn't hear me when Shirley was seeing this guy. I said, oh, that's because I knew it was coming. I'm glad he didn't hear me, though, because at least he got to find out on his own. But I love calling her out for this bullshit, and I'm a big fan of what this episode is starting to turn into, which is making every single person in this cast look inward at their own inner demons, their own ghosts, per se. And I love that that's a reason that they have to go back to Hill House, almost have to go do it together. Like, I think that's very interesting. And like I mentioned, great storytelling. The fear and guilt monologue is just really more good stuff. It would really suck to have all that really serious dialogue while you're trying to have sex. But, whatever. It happens. Last thing, all these hands being there is fucking creepy. It gave me the heebie-jeebies, which I don't like saying that much, but I do. I thought it was a great shot, great visuals.
All right, I just want to give props to Anna Inger Rich. She's really good in this interaction with Luke. I did think the runny eye effect was just okay. It wasn't anywhere near as good as Lee's pregnancy haunting. Miss Hill is whooping these kids' ass. One poke to the head, and she's knocking folks out like nothing. Finally fleshing out who the mystery man is Shirley's been seeing. I find it highly unlikely that Caribbean jerk wings are the appetizer at least ordered, though. I think it sounds fire with a dab of ranch. Shirley's acted like this perfect angel all season. It's nice to see she has flaws. How dare she hate on my man Kevin and accuse him of cheating
exactly. When
she gave up the goods on her business retreat. But on a serious note, great acting from both. Reeser has been phenomenal all season with her emotional acting. I love Nell waking Shirley up as she sees her corpse ripping her eyes out. This is my last bit. I don't have a lot on this set of scenes. Theo's scene is tough to take notes on from a guy's POV, if you know what I'm saying. It's quite sexy. But what an ending when all these ghost hands hold her down and Nell saves her. I will say Theo's is probably my least favorite, right, just from like a storytelling point of view, but I really enjoyed all the siblings recaps.
I just want y'all to imagining that happening to you while you were trying to get your freak on. Like that's a tough day at the office.
Get your freak on.
I'm sure
on
Dustin can relate last weekend. Sorry, go ahead.
Get your freak on. All right, Missy Elliott. We cut to a room with white walls, and Luke sits up in the floor. Olivia, Abigail, and Young Nell are at the table, and we see the red door in the background. Olivia says they're home. She tells Luke she almost named him Robin, but luckily she didn't because he would have been bullied into submission as a kid being named that. Nell tells Luke to go and sit, don't sit at the table. Olivia puts the bowler hat on and tells Luke he's awake now. Nell tells him to go again, and Luke says he doesn't want to be dead. Suddenly, Luke starts coughing and comes alive in the red room. He says she saved me and points to Nell, who's in the room with him now. She says she feels clearer now and keeps babbling about God knows what while ignoring Steve and Theo trying to talk to her. Then she says they all been in the red room before several times and didn't know it. She says life isn't like dominoes. It's more like rain or snow or confetti, and I'm thinking she got into Luke's stash. She says the red room was the stomach of the house, whatever that means. We find out the red room was actually many different rooms, including Luke's treehouse. Nell tells Luke that she's not gone, and they all take turns apologizing, and then she disappears. Hugh wakes up in the hallway, and now that he's well-rested, he pops a pill, which I assumed was a Perk 30, because right after, Ghost Poppy shows up, telling a demented rhyme about murders, and Hugh is way too calm. Olivia comes to his defense and tells her to stay away from her man. Olivia finds the pill bottle, and Hugh says it's for his heart, but he can lie to her, but not to me. I know that was a Perk 30. Olivia tells Hugh that they're safe in this home, and Hugh tells her she's full of shit because the kids are dying. She says they're waking, and I'd have to throw her ass off the staircase, to be honest. She tells Hugh this is their forever house, and she tells Hugh that she won't let him take the kids away from her again. He begs her to open the red door, and the two share a touching moment. Meanwhile, Luke is in a bad way inside, but luckily Hugh opens the door, and they get him into the car. Hugh says that he and Steve have unfinished business, and they stay behind while the girls take Luke to the hospital. Steve asks Hugh what he saw, and then a car pulls up. Young Hugh gets out and goes into the house, calling out for Olivia. He runs into a room and screams, and adult Steve follows. He sees his dad holding his mom's bloody dead body, and Hugh asks Mrs. Dudley what happened and says he can't fix it. Hugh asks why the Dudleys are there, and Mr. Dudley says they were looking for their daughter. He takes them to her dead body, and then her ghost comes up to them and snitches on Olivia for poisoning her.
Jesus-like symbolism here with Nell in the red room. But I really love this moment. I mean, just everyone finally together, everyone getting to say their goodbyes, and just the way the whole scene was written and how it's, you know, kind of backwards at first, but then it all comes together because, you know, like Nell says, time isn't linear. I think that was just fantastic writing and a great moment for Victoria Pendretti, because it's her moment to shine here with this monologue, and she just absolutely kills it. There's so much in her eyes. It's a very emotional moment. It's the one that I'd been waiting for this whole third act of the season, basically. And kind of piggybacking off of what Mike said last set of scenes, could have done without Poppy again here. But I do love all the connective tissue with Olivia and Hugh in their moment. And it finally just confirming that it was, you know, Olivia in Hugh's head this whole time, which is another great monologue from Timothy Hutton, that response about the house being their forever house, just connecting her drawing their forever house over and over again on the plans, you know, throughout the season. Just really good screenplay. But it almost paints death as a purgatory, or at least this family's, because like they're so connected with this house for some reason. I guess, like mentioned earlier, I guess it's implying that it's a virus. But really, just giving you that, the whole point of the show, I took from it anyway, where it's just better to feel something than nothing, really. I mean, that's kind of how I took it. It's almost like my discussion with sequels to great movies that I have, you know, with Dustin. But if it's bad, it ruins it. But the counter is, well, would you rather have missed out on the good rather than the bad? Or, you know, if you ask me about FSU or even the 49ers and the Super Bowl and national championship, I hate losing so much that I'd almost rather not go as a team than lose it, if that makes sense. Also, sidebar, like it's kind of crazy hearing them say Sacred Heart as a hospital, because that's our local hospital here in Pensacola. So kind of weird. Took me by surprise when I heard that. But again, the whole Dudley stuff is what I really don't care for, if I'm being honest. And we'll kind of get into that less so scenes.
Yeah. Like how there's some Panic at the Disco looking top hats here. And I know top hats have existed before that, but given the mood and the setting, that it just reminded me of the music video there for I Write Sins, Not Tragedies. Anyway, this is a great scene in his decision to, quote unquote, not kill Luke. I mean, watching this for the first time, it really played on my emotions, and this time I thought it was great. My phone decided in this last two blurbs instead of scenes to change Nell to Nelly. So all my notes are about fucking rapper, Country Grammar, Nelly, baby. Yeah. So I do apologize. Yeah, man, nothing I can do about that. Sorry. but again, we went over the reveal of the Red Room being open the whole time of their childhood. And while it was given away in the like treehouse dialogue with Hugh and Steve, I thought to actually see it all back to back to back to back, I thought was really, really cool. Cool visual, great reveal. Thought it was awesome. This is great shit from Victoria Pedretti. I love the line, "Life, the rest is just confetti." That is fucking awesome. I thought that's a really good way to put some bad times in perspective, in my opinion. It was really hard to take notes on this back and forth between Olivia and Hugh. I would just recommend to go watch it. Brian did a good job. But I will say, I would recommend taking the time, find it, watch it. It's fucking great. Their dialogue is awesome, and it's emotional as hell. Highly recommend. And from Olivia and everything that happened with her to Abigail, this whole scene, just fucking heartbreaking, man. Like, it was really hard for me to take notes on, because around the second time here, I'm still emotionally invested in what's happening. And I would highly recommend you just go watch it. I know that's not great podcasting, but that's really all I had.
No, you're right, though, Mike. This is a really emotional, dialogue heavy scene between the characters, so it is hard to just review it. You do need to watch it. But starting off, I just love the colors and the white walls and the red room. They just look visually stunning to me. Hot take maybe, but I love the interactions with the older siblings and their younger selves. I really appreciated that. Victoria Pedretti, I love you. You are exceptional. In a room full of stars, you shine brightest. I love the reveal of what the red room was all for them. This should have been in Mike's March Madness bracket. I love this scene with the siblings all forgiving one another, loving each other. I'm like Vin Diesel. Family is so important to me. Great review talk right here. Miss Hill and Ghost Worm, I thought looked phenomenal. Nothing sadder than a cold bed. That's a bar, Miss Hill. That's a bar. This is an extremely powerful scene between Hugh and Olivia talking about their children, life, marriage, their love. Henry Thomas with a great horrifying scream finding Olivia dead. He's such a dad, wanting to fix everything. My heart breaks for him. I thought this was brutal. The Dudleys finding their daughter dead on the floor after all they've been through. First their stillborn child, now this. I thought it was crushing. What an emotional set of scenes, and I can't wait for this last set. That's the last I got.
Oh, Olivia's ghost is walking around downstairs next to her dead body saying she's having the strangest dream. And then upstairs, Hugh says he's burning this motherfucker down, Pookie. Mr. Dudley says he'll bury Abigail next to their house, and they'll keep their mouth shut about what happened there that night if they keep the house and keep everyone else away so they can stay there with Abigail. Hugh tells Steve that some things can't be told. You live them, but they can't be told. We see Hugh's dead body on the floor with the Perk 30 spilled all around him, and then they apologize to each other. Hugh tells Steve that the house is his now and that he's proud of the kids. He turns into young Hugh and says he was so lucky to be his dad, and walks into the red room and embraces Olivia and Nell. As Steve walks towards the front door, all the ghosts are standing in the foyer in a cool shot. We see Luke in the hospital with the siblings for a minute, and then Steve arrives back at his home. Steve tells his wife he was wrong for so long and that he's lived with ghosts for so long. Ghosts are secrets, regrets, failings, and a wish. He says a marriage is a wish and can be a haunted house, and we cut to Cheryl and Kevin. Cheryl spills the beans about banging old boy in Chicago 6 years ago, and back to Steve, and he tells his wife he built walls around parts of his life. And then we see Theo picking up and leaving Cheryl's guest house with Trish. Packing up and leaving Cheryl's guest house with Trish, there to help her. Steve and his wife hug, and we see Mr. Dudley carry Mrs. Dudley into the Hill house, And then we see Luke cutting a cake to commemorate 2 years clean before Steve's narration continues. And we see one last look at the outside of Hill House before we roll credits. That was Ian. What'd you guys think?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, the Dudley stuff, it's just, to me, it's so meh. Like, I mean, their reaction was so just like accepting. I mean, that's your unicorn baby right there, which if you've had a miscarriage before, you understand that term. But you've tried so hard to keep her safe, not allow her up there because you're so in love and protecting of this girl. And that is your reaction? Oh, there's the ghost of our daughter. Let's make a deal. Like, this just felt so rushed and so just like almost jarring to me. Just why even have Abigail and the Dudleys and that whole situation? Like, couldn't you have just had Hugh not want to destroy the house because his wife is still in there? Because, I mean, Hugh, like, this decision and this weird deal with the Dudleys, like, this is what ended up killing your daughter, Nell, and almost your son, Luke. And then his excuse for not telling them, like, not telling them the truth is what caused this turmoil the past how many years? That's just, I don't know, man. And, you know, and now the show almost makes the house a good thing. Like, we see them walk off together, and that kind of brings up a question that I've seen all over the place. Like, Nell's ghost has been consistent. Like, but Olivia's ghost has been, like, good. She's been bad. She pushed Nell off the fucking staircase, and now she's good again, walking around. I mean, it's just, I don't know about all that. Now, Steven's narration describing Hill House, it's actually an expanded version of the one that started the series. Really great way to end it because of how it started. This whole thing was almost too happy to me, though, with the house still standing. I don't know. Like I said before, as a fan of something you love so much, at what point does projecting what you want to see hinder you from what you do see? Like, that's the age-old question with Star Wars, all of these beloved franchises, Ghostbusters. Like, does it make this not good? No. But could there have been some stuff differently done differently that I definitely would have wanted to see? Absolutely.
Okay. It's pretty clear that trying to burn the house down is a no-go. That shit ain't gonna work. What's the definition of insanity? Anyway, why are the Dudleys this forgiving? Like, I know they know about the house and what it's done to Olivia, but, like, I mean, they just kind of like, oh, God, like, it wasn't anything over. And look, it was so emotional to me to see the death of Abigail. I just didn't get that from the parents. Like, I don't know. There was something missing there, in my opinion. It's almost like they knew this would happen and were, like, prepared for it or something. Like, very odd to me. I don't know. Something about that just didn't feel right. But the rest of this set of scenes, I was a big fan of. This scene with Hugh here got me a little fucking misty-eyed, like, legitimately misty-eyed. And they used the score really well here, too. Really cool visual of all these ghosts following Steve out to let you know, hey, man, you too, bud. Not just everybody else, you too. And look, I liked it. You know, this dialogue, this ending dialogue from Shirley, I thought was fine. But I personally think with how much of a bitch she acted like towards everybody about what went down, and now, I don't know, everyone's just supposed to be okay with her. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I would do that. And like I said, I'm kind of fine with a happy ending for my man Steve and Theo as well. Like, they've had some turmoil in their life. There's a stutter there. S's and T's and R's. Get me, bro. S's, T's, and R's. Shout out to Mrs. Smith, Spook Elementary, my speech coach. Anyway, she tried her best. That's all I can say. but I agree with you, Brian. It almost felt like they used the house as a good thing in the end, but we haven't. That was not really set up for us the whole show. So I kind of feel like, that's interesting. Like, I don't necessarily hate it. I just kind of wish, I don't know what I was expecting. Maybe just not that, I guess. I do like the plot device of the house being what makes everyone look inward at themselves. And know every single person has their own ghosts that they deal with every single day. Like you mentioned, the ghost, the house, all a metaphor for whether that be mental illness, you know, depression, all that other stuff. I think that was a really good way narratively to tell that story. So really good episode, at least maybe the last like 40 minutes or so, I thought were really, really emotional. And I was kind of okay with seeing a happy ending. I just don't feel like they set one up is all.
All right. I thought it was very noticeable that Hugh's eyes have changed from the blue color. His life and joy have been taken from him. I disagree with you guys. I really like the Dudley story. This is beyond heartbreaking. Seeing the Dudleys begging for Hugh to not tear the house down so they can spend time with their baby girl. I can't imagine carrying my child's dead body to go bury it. Man, I thought that was some crushing stuff. And, you know, I'm not a father, so I can't really speak from that perspective. But I feel like if I knew that, if I lost my child, but at least I could see her spirit in the house, I guess I would just cling on to that hope. So I guess I do see the positive of that. But I get where you guys are coming from. I love seeing Steve and Hugh making up, Hugh telling how much he loved his family. I'm tearing up here, fam. Hugh reuniting with Olivia and Nellie. You finally feel a bit of hope for the family. Shirley's coming across as a bit of a hypocrite, but I appreciate her vulnerability admitting her biggest mistake. I do wish we got to see this whole scenario play out, though. We saw Kevin go through hell from Earth throughout the entire series. I feel like she could have got some criticism on air. This is beautiful. Theo is happy and moving out. Steve coming home to his wife. And, man, it really got me when Mr. Dudley was carrying his wife in the Hill House so their family can remain whole. I thought the show was phenomenal. I can't compliment Mike Flanagan, each set member, every cast member enough. Great job on making my single favorite single season of television.
It was a very emotional episode. I kind of agree with Mike. Like I'm kind of glad that he got a happy ending, but that's not the direction we were headed at all. It looked like this is just doom and gloom from the onset. And so I like this episode more than the last episode or more than episode 9, because it didn't feel like it was chock full of filler. It wasn't so slow moving. And I thought that they did a great job with the cutbacks, the flashbacks, and then tying it all together. I thought that the twist of, you know, the reason Steve and Hugh stayed the reason Steve and Hugh stayed back at the house was because, you know, Hugh's dead now. He can't leave the house. But again, that goes back to what I said a couple episodes, or I think it was last episode. Why can't Abigail go somewhere else? Why do they have to keep the house? Because these other ghosts are able to move about the real world willy-nilly. So
true.
Why is only Abigail and Olivia and Hugh confined to the house? That doesn't make sense to me. But overall, I mean, the last episode I did enjoy more than episode 9. But the ending in episode 9 made it closer than I thought it was going to be. Cool. Let me run through this real quick, because I got to fill in it. I came across that I disliked this series more than what I actually did. So first episode, I went with 6.75, then a 7.75, then a 6.25, then a 5.5 for episode 4. That's the lowest in the series for me. But then I went 9.25, 9.5, 6.75, 8. And then the last two episodes, I gave a 7.5 and a 7.75. So my composite score, my overall average for the series is a 7.5. So I did enjoy the show. I didn't want it to seem like I didn't. It's just not my favorite.
No, you're good.
I wanted to let it, you know, clear my good name, because Ed Kennedy has been, he loves this show. Like when we posted on Instagram, he'll comment to me and the account. Like, he loves this show. I don't want you to think I don't like it. And Nico, same with you, because it's your favorite series. I didn't dislike it. It was a very fine series.
I would encourage you, maybe one day, just whenever, you know, we got plenty of time, maybe if another pandemic smacks us over the face, just binge it one day. Maybe if you just binge it all and we're not doing two episodes at a time, and we're not, like, honestly, like, we skipped a week, and like Mike kind of mentioned, you got to get back in the headspace. I kind of forgot what the last two episodes were about already. You know what I'm saying? So maybe you just binge it one time, it might hit a little different. So, but I'll go ahead and just give my overall rating, and then Mike and Brian can go. I've already made myself clear. I love the show. Obviously, if you've listened to all of our episodes reviewing them, I've got some flaws with it. But I gave the series a 10. Like, I rated that on IMDb. I love this show. It introduced me to so many new great actors and actresses. Like, the only ones that I was really kind of familiar with when I went into this was Elizabeth Reeser and Lulu Wilson, for sure, from Ouija Origin of Evil. I'd seen that movie before. I had seen the newest Annabelle Comes Home or whatever. I saw McKenna Grace in that. So I wasn't really familiar with a lot of these actors and actresses, but I'm a big fan of theirs now. I like a lot of their work. Victoria Pedretti is great in the show You, which I know we'll do down the road as well. I love these characters. I love the show. It's very emotional. It gets a pull out of me every time we watch it. So, yeah, I gave it a 10. I really love the show.
Nico, I just have to ask you, have you seen E.T.?
I knew Henry Thomas as well from Ouija Origin. I saw E.T., but I was young when I saw it. I can't remember. I haven't seen E.T., but I haven't seen it in a long time.
Okay. So, well, my least favorite kill was definitely Hugh. My favorite kill was Abigail. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. All right. So, listen. I really love this show, too. I will say breaking it down the way we have has been interesting for two reasons. One, I felt like there were a few times I tried to find nitpicks because the first time through I enjoyed it so much I wanted to come at it a little differently this time and critique its flaws. I don't think that takes away any of its enjoyability for me. Episode 9 and 4 are the only ones I can really say – or 3 – Luke's episode is 4. Yeah, 4 and 9 are the only ones that really, like, drag for me. And so I think just really solid writing, character development. The visuals are incredible. I love the music, and the cast is awesome. Like, I cannot give this cast enough love. I will say, it's hard. You know, you mentioned it. It's hard to remember the episodes of a TV show way more than a movie that we've done.
Like, it really is.
I can remember, I know you know, buddy, but I can remember, like, you know, every little detail about Nightmare on Elm Street 3 or Scream 5, like, whatever. Like, I can remember those details, but in this one, I'm like, why the fuck did I write this again? What happened in this episode? Like,
it's no, really. I'm with you 100% on that. Remembering this show is way harder than movies.
Absolutely. So I'm glad we're kind of getting our feet wet here and doing that. Now I understand why Dustin wanted to do the episodes last Monday, but it wasn't no fucking way I was going to, man.
But, man, it's kind of like remembering 10 different movies. You know what I'm saying?
It really is. That's fair. That's fair. Okay, I'll shut the fuck up now, so Brian can go and we don't lose this file.
Do you give a score?
Yeah, I'm about to. So, all in all, with all that being said, I gave this series a flat 9.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just go ahead and jump right to that. Just because you said it, I actually gave it a 9 as well. But yeah, I agree with you, Mike. You know, breaking it down, I think it was really, really good for me. I loved this show the first time I watched it. And this time it was just different because, like you said, breaking it down, it was really good for me because it showed how really organized, that's what stand out to me, was how really organized the show was with, you know, with each sibling getting an episode. Stuff like that that I didn't pay attention to when I first watched it. I just watched it, enjoyed it, okay. But I didn't sit down and hammer all this stuff out and realize, like I said, each sibling gets an episode. Then the dad gets an episode. Then the mom gets an episode. And then it all comes together. Like, I love breaking it down. I'm very glad we're doing these shows, doing this TV series. Because it is, like you said, it is different than doing movies. And it's not a bad different. It's just different.
So that gives us a composite score betwixt the four of us of 8.875. IMDb has it at 8.6, so we're right there. Rotten Tomatoes actually has it at 93%. I also wanted to say, Nico, you're absolutely right. I think that this show suffered in my eyes from watching it two episodes at a time. If I did go back and binge it all in one, I'd probably appreciate it more. And also, like Brian said there, I think that if I watched it again, because this was my first time watching it, if I watched it again, I'd pick up on so much more. So maybe my score would go up some. But I'll be honest with you, if this was, you know, pre-streaming era days, and this was just a show that got released one episode at a time, and then you got to wait till the next, I probably wouldn't have stuck it through. Like, I probably would not have seen it through. But
I'd say that's fair.
Shout out to the Netflix model for this one. It definitely benefited from it.
Dude, I'm definitely a binger. Like, Archive 81, you, like, if I'm not watching all in one day, I'm doing it in 2 days. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hate waiting a week for an episode. Like, I just can't do it anymore.
You season 4 was such bullshit because I'm like, just fucking release all the goddamn episodes, man. Like, I don't want to wait to find out what happens to Joe Goldberg.
That show was bullshit because it was boring as hell.
Yeah, so season 4 sucked. But
I think that it depends on the show for me as far as what I prefer. Because I'll be honest with you, the Game of Thrones days when the timeline's in unison and we're all tweeting about it on a Sunday night, like, I love that shit. And I would much rather,
very much so.
I think a show like that, you need to sit on what you just saw for a little while before you go right into the next one. But a show like this, I think you need to binge it. You need to watch them back to back to back. So I think it's situational for me.
You know what? You're probably right, because I remember when Spartacus came out like back in like 2010 and it came on Stars. Like, I love that show. I'd watch it every week with my friends. So you might be onto something. It might just depend on the show. And like, I want you to go ahead and announce your pick for that. The next series we're doing, Dustin. And I haven't seen this series, and I'm going to be as open minded as I can. And I think what's really good about the way we're doing these series is I might hate episode 2. Like, I mean, I don't even know what 1 or 2 is about. But, you know, right. For example, I might hate episode 2, but then episode 5 explains it, and like, oh shit, episode 2 was actually pretty good in hindsight. So that's what I like about these series too. Like, the next episode could fix the last episode. So I really like that.
I will say that was what was confusing about Hill House a little bit, was because it was really hard to tell, even upon this watch, what was real and what wasn't. Like, even watching it, because we didn't binge it, I'd forget what we watched the week before. And I'm like, wait, what is that? What is real? Again, I think it adds something to it, like in a good way, a positive way, but it did get a little confusing is all, I guess. So trial and error here as we take notes for an actual television series. I think Walking Dead will be a little easier.
Well, just go ahead and announce it. Why don't you? So, no. My pick, this is a show that I'm torn on because I think it's really, really fucking good television in the first, I don't know, 4 seasons or so. But my God, they drug it out. There's 11 seasons of it. So we're going, taking it back to 2010. We're doing The Walking Dead next, season 1 of The Walking Dead. Now, let me ask you, am I correct? None of you guys have seen it?
I've never seen it.
Dude, I've seen it.
Oh, you have. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, so Mike, I've seen the first 3.5 seasons.
That's right. Okay. I knew that you hadn't finished it. So for some reason,
season 1, I'm all in, buddy. Let's fucking go.
So I did. I'm going to be doing the scene by scene on the first 2 episodes, so that Nico and Brian can give their first time unbiased opinions and they can speak freely. But I got a feeling that you're both going to enjoy it, because I think the first season especially is just so phenomenal.
I'm interested to see if it's just going to be nostalgia for me or if I still enjoy it. I'm very interested.
You know what's funny is last year, before we even dreamt up this series spinoff show that we're doing, I did a rewatch. I watched it, and because I was like, it was really bothering me that I hadn't ever watched, I didn't finish it. So I finished it. And the first four seasons, like I said, they were phenomenal then and they held up. So I did the scene by scene the other day for the first 2 episodes and they held up again. So I'm really looking forward to hearing you guys' thoughts on it.
Same here. We appreciate y'all listening. Hope y'all enjoyed the first series we reviewed, and we'll be back next week with The Walking Dead. Just want to remind everybody, don't go out there. When the hands of fate from the midnight hour, behind this mask of hate.